Tim, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning.
Great to be with you, Tess.
So you've written a bunch of books on racism. I mean, you've got I'm Not Racist But and Don't Go Back to Where You Came From. What does On Hate explore that you haven't necessarily in the past?
This is really a reflection on the past 5 years that I've had as Race Discrimination Commissioner and on the debates that we've had about race issues during that time. Obviously, a lot of debate about the Racial Discrimination Act. We've had debates about free speech. We've had the rise of Donald Trump and the emergence, re-emergence of neo-Nazi and white supremacist forces. So I thought it'd be a timely occasion to reflect on what it all means. And for me, it's a direct challenge to our democratic values. And it's a challenge to us not to be complacent, because we can often think of hate and the explosions of hate as aberrations or just as activities on the fringe. But if we're not careful, we could see a normalization or mainstreaming of hate, and that can happen very quickly.
And it can, I feel. We've seen the beginnings of it begin to happen, and you're right, very, very quickly.
Well, just look at the weekend, right? Over the weekend, we had swastikas plastered all over Bondi. Just last month, we had a neo-Nazi rally on St Kilda Beach. For the past year or so, we've had a great deal of racist hysteria over African gangs. And then you think of what's happening in Parliament, and you've had Fraser Anning give a speech on the floor of the Senate calling for a final solution to the immigration problem. Pauline Hanson moving a motion about how it's okay to be white, which is a white supremacist slogan. And had that supported by 20-odd government senators. So this is all very real, and if we're not careful, we could be setting up the conditions for a breakdown of our democratic values.
And On Hate, it details a lot of your personal experiences as well. In your lifetime, how has race relations changed and evolved in Australia?
It seems like we take a few steps forward, and then sometimes we stall or go backwards. It's always very difficult to know how we're going. If we take a very long view of things, then we have improved and things have progressed. But once you step back into the fray, you find that there are constant debates and constant contests over what it means to be Australian, who's Australian, who belongs here, what racism must mean. For me, we've seen some generational change, and I think younger people understand racism in a very different way to what older generations of Australians might. And by that I mean there'd be some who believe that racism only refers to organised movements of hate or a doctrinal belief in racial superiority. But we've become more adept at understanding the subtleties of racism and understanding the casual and everyday forms of racism. And that extends to the idea of hate more generally as well. Hate doesn't have to involve violence. It can be insidious. It can be well disguised. It can be polite.
And that is an excellent springboard into the next question I had for you. You speak in the book about types of hate that go undetected. How do we, even go about combating undetected hate just by the nature of it? It's not something very easy to tackle head on, I feel.
Well, very few people are going to say to you, yes, I'm a bigot. Or yes, I hate X or Y group. Most people are intelligent enough to know that our society doesn't endorse such hatred. So they're not going to be open and direct about it. They're going to find ways to do it without detection. I think of it this way. We can often think of forms of racism as being about overt expression of hatred. Think about the bus or the train episode where someone abuses or vilifies another. You can equally have someone who's sitting there on the other side of a desk interviewing you for a job. They might be impeccably polite to you, treat you with absolute courtesy, but if they're throwing your CV in the dustbin just because of your name or the way you look, that still counts as a form of racism. And hate works in the same way. You don't need to say it to someone's face in order to hate someone. In fact, if people are driven by hate or a sense of revenge or anger, they know they're going to be more effective if they don't reveal themselves to others.
And you have described the race politics that you do speak about in On Hate as a return of race politics. What lessons should we be learning from the past moving forward?
We know that politics sets the tone for our society. So when political leaders give the green light for some to say or do certain things, you can't be surprised that people start saying and doing certain things. In the years that I was at the Human Rights Commission, nothing perhaps set the tone more than George Brandis, the former Attorney General, declaring in Parliament that people had a right to be bigots. Now, that encouraged some pretty extreme elements in our society out there to think, yes, we can go out and express and vent our bigotry because we've got the Attorney General of Australia giving us permission to do so. I think that had a big effect on the discussions and debates we've had about race. If you want a very obvious lesson around politics and race, it's that you've got to model leadership and you've got to be absolutely firm in pushing back against any kind of racial hatred or extremism, because if you're soft in any way, extreme elements will take advantage of that and they will start becoming more assertive.
Well, Tim, we really, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be with you. Thanks, Tess.